Hear it through the eyes of women. We've been missing the captain of this ship, our former executive producer, Kathleen Marshall. Kathleen is a vibrant, active lady who's doing a little less than she'd like to be doing these days because she has chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome, aka myalgic encephalomyelitis. And today she's going to lend us a little understanding into the world of chronic invisible illness and how we can be better friends to the people in our lives who look so much better than they feel. Tip number one, don't tell them how great they look. I'm your host, Emma Burkhan, and this is Through the Eyes of Women on KHSU. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program about the lives and perspectives of women local, national, and international. Kathleen Marshall served for a long time as the executive producer of Through the Eyes of Women. She's the one who personally recruited me to be a host a few years back, mentored me, and taught me a good deal of whatever it is that I know. She's been on sabbatical from KHSU and Through the Eyes of Women for a while now, and today she's back in the studio as our guest to share with us a part of her life that even some of her friends and colleagues may not be entirely aware of. Hi, Kathleen. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Hi, Emma. It's great to be here on the guest side of the microphone.
We'll try and make it comfy for you. So this is something that you're sharing. Some people who know you and care about you will be hearing this for the first time today.
Yes, some of them will be hearing it for the first time. Others know about it, but really don't know too many of the details of when I was diagnosed, how I was diagnosed, what effect it has on me in my everyday existence.
So let's start with the story. What happened? When did you become ill?
Well, it's been quite a while. I was diagnosed in 1993, so I've been diagnosed 23 years ago. But I think I was sick. I was complaining about my declining health for a good year before that. I had just graduated from the HSU nursing program in 1992, got a great job down in San Francisco. But my health was deteriorating, and I went to see many practitioners, doctors, and counselors, and they all said, decrease your stress, change your job. So I did that. I moved back to Humboldt County. I had also gotten married. And on the third job change, the day after my first training, I collapsed, literally. My husband took me into open-door clinic on a same-day appointment basis, and the only person available to see was a pediatrician whom I had worked with. He took one look at me, and he said, something's really wrong with you. And from there, I was referred to doctors who could proceed with all the testing required before diagnosis.
And just to be clear, there was, for you, never any kind of confusion about, is this just a little random malaise? Is this the process of, getting older? You were entering your 30s at this point?
I was 36.
So there was no confusing it for anything else, just normal part of aging or having an off day or off week or burning the candle at both ends. You knew something was wrong, and so did your doctor.
I knew something was wrong. The pediatrician who saw me could tell that something was wrong, but I had seen a string of doctors in the preceding year as my health was deteriorating who did not see that there was anything particularly wrong.
Unfortunately, you got a diagnosis faster than some people do when they're dealing with these issues and trying to track them down.
Absolutely. Some people don't get a diagnosis for up to 16 years. I've met people who have suffered with chronic fatigue syndrome for 16 years before getting any validation for their illness.
Do they think they're going crazy at this point?
Yes.
Gosh.
They know something is wrong, but it is a diagnosis of exclusion. Every other illness that could possibly cause the symptoms in chronic fatigue syndrome have to be excluded before a doctor will be willing to make a diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome. And it is still not accepted by the greater medical community as a legitimate illness in much of the United States, though in the rest of the world, it is known as myalgic encephalomyelitis, and it's been a valid diagnosis for decades.
And what is it? What is it that's wrong with you, Kathleen?
Well, it's an interesting combination of symptoms. One of the hallmark symptoms, clearly you can tell by the name, chronic fatigue syndrome, is fatigue. So I'm exhausted quite a bit. And an interesting co-syndrome is insomnia.
Well, exactly.
So being exhausted and not being able to sleep is not a very good combination. And there certainly are other symptoms, headaches, mental fog, sore throats. For me, I develop ear infections. And, you know, the worst ones, though, are the fatigue, insomnia, and the mental fog. I used to have a nearly photographic memory, and that is long gone.
And once again, we are not mistaking that for the fact that we're all aging and we all deteriorate and we all lose some of our edge at some point. But that is not at all what we're talking about.
No, it's not. I was actually 36 when I started feeling symptoms and 37 when I was diagnosed. But I know teenagers who have been diagnosed with this illness, and their symptoms can certainly not be associated with aging.
And what does the invisibility aspect of this illness mean?
Well, I tend to be out and about when I feel better, as opposed to when I'm exhausted. And so when I'm out and about, I look normal. And people don't realize that I struggle every day with trying to manage my activities so that I'm not exhausted all the time, so that I can be out and about. So, you know, when a person has an illness and they look normal, people expect normal behavior.
You're objectively hot, youthful, tan, toned, radiant, active, dancer, carpenter. And some of us might not understand, how is that a problem in this situation?
The fact that I look okay?
Yeah, that you look, I'm sorry, great, I'm sorry, but you do.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, as a woman, there's a twofold answer to that question. One, as a woman, there's always been a superficial value of me for my looks. And let me emphasize that it is a superficial value because my looks do not dictate who I am. And it is, in the case of having an invisible chronic illness, the answer is very much the same. My looks are not who I am. My looks do not reflect the struggle that I face every single day.
For a lot of us, being, you know, reasonably good looking can maybe smooth out a few bumps in the road ahead of you, make your day run a little bit nicer, make people respond to you a little bit nicer. But it would also make it hard for people to understand that you are not feeling well and that you're combating a very real condition.
Yes, that is a possibility. I also tend not to talk about it, actually. This is the first time I've actually spoken about this in public, and I rarely talk about it with anybody, even my closest friends.
And I was wondering about that. I've got a few friends that I'm aware of dealing with chronic pain and invisible illness, and just on the overall scale of when we listen to our friends complain and talk about the problems in our lives, those are the friends who probably complain less than anybody. You have any insight as to why?
Isn't that interesting? Well, I can't really give you insight into why other people don't complain, but I complain plenty at home in private. And that's been something I've had to deal with so that I don't completely burn out my lovely husband. But in public, I don't complain, partly because I have not wanted people to know. I've been very wedded to the idea that I might recover and that I could reclaim my career. And it's only been until recently that I have realized, I mean, obviously it's been 23 years since my diagnosis, that I have come to accept that this seems to be a forever condition for me, and that no, I am not going to have a flaming career in nursing. at this point. So it makes me feel more comfortable talking about it. The other thing is that I don't particularly want people to focus on my illness, because my illness is not entirely all of who I am. I am so much more than my illness.
And aren't we all? What is a good day like?
Oh, a good day is when I've managed to sleep through the night without waking up a couple of times, and when I've managed to sleep without throwing every drug in the book at my system. I don't think I've had a natural sleep probably for 22 years. There's been one drug in my system or another. So the fewer drugs I take to sleep, and actually getting restful sleep, is always a harbinger, a lovely harbinger of a good day to come. And that good day lets me do things that on a bad day I can't do. I can get up early. I can see to chores in my house. I can be out and about. I can make limited commitments to actually doing things. I can see my friends. I can take walks. I can go swimming. Bad days are very, very different from things like that. And I really measure the success of any given day by very small increments and doing very small things. I don't have grand ambitions and grand ideas about what defines success any longer.
What are some of the real ideas about what defines success?
My current real ideas?
Yes.
Success means having a happy day in which I'm able to do small things that I find fulfilling. See a friend, do my dishes, get some laundry done, have positive interactions with my friends and my family.
What is this doing to your relationships in general?
Well, initially it was incredibly difficult on my relationship. I was newly married. I had only been married for about 8 months when I was diagnosed. So my new husband was thrown into this role of caretaker. And the initial phase of the illness found me bedridden for 6 months. I couldn't even support my own weight to travel the 15 feet from my bed to the bathroom. It was very, very, very scary. And at the time, I was so involved with my own responses to that. And I was grateful for all of his help. But it wasn't only until much later on that I realized how difficult that had been for him and how difficult the ensuing years of recovery was for him. It took a long time and a lot of counseling and a lot of redefining of who I am to get to a place of acceptance. And his struggle was as profound as mine. And, you know, I had never thought about talking with my son about how it may have affected him, but I called him recently and I asked him. And he says it didn't affect him whatsoever. I was really good at hiding it from him.
When we were talking, you used a phrase about being sick on your own time and not on their time.
Yes, unfortunately, I was sick on my husband's time, and that took a tremendous toll on a relationship. We've been through a lot of counseling, and we did separate for a year, partly as a way of resolving many of the issues that came up. But for me, I was a single mother of an only child, and I wanted his life to be as normal as possible. So I did everything in my power to be sick on my time and not on his.
How do you begin doing that?
Well, I rested. I would be on the couch while he was in school. And when he came home from school, I always had snacks and activities, and he had his friends over. On weekends, I would rest all week long so that I could take him on a little skiing jaunt to Mount Shasta on the weekends. And then afterwards, I would rest again.
Did you need a lot of recovery after that skiing jaunt? Were you skiing?
When he was little, I did ski, and yes, I needed a lot of rest. I mean, part of taking your 10-year-old kid skiing is you ski with your kid. You don't just send them out on the slopes all by themselves.
I don't know these things. I don't have a kid. I just thought you put a big bowl of kid chow out and, you know, tied them to a stake in the yard. No?
Not on the mountain, fortunately. But you know, things like that. And I actually have done that not only for him, but for other things. I've been very involved in organizing things. I was an organizer for the Vagina Monologues 1 year and helped to raise $10,000. And I would push and push and push and push myself to get the goals accomplished. I tend to be a very responsible person. I have been employed off and on during these 23 years. And I take my responsibilities very seriously. And I tend to destroy myself taking care of my responsibilities. And then I have to rest up. I've learned not to do that. I've learned how to break that cycle of behavior in myself.
You are listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Emma Brakan, and our guest is Kathleen Marshall, former executive producer of Through the Eyes of Women, who lives with chronic fatigue and is giving us the inside scoop on what it's like living with a chronic invisible illness. Kathleen, we talked a lot about this being a transformative experience and about it putting you through reinventions of your sense of yourself.
Yes. It was very difficult. In my previous life, I sort of have two time periods in my life, before chronic fatigue and after chronic fatigue. Before chronic fatigue, I was very active. I started dancing when I was 15. I went from dancing to living in the woods and became a carpenter and worked on cars and learned to weld. And I ran and I swam. And I've always been incredibly physically active. I moved up to Arcata to go back to school, and I would bike 40, 45 miles on a weekend easily. I would run. I was involved with samba, with African dancing. When the chronic fatigue hit, I couldn't do any of that. And I lost that sense of confidence that comes with being a physical creature. I also lost my intellect, because I went from, like I said, a near photographic memory to, in the initial phases, having a very, very foggy memory. I would see people on the street that I'd known for years and not be able to remember their names. So I lost every sense of who I was. And it took years and years and years to go piece by piece by piece to figure out what pieces of who I was still fit, whether I needed to just try to completely reinvent myself, or whether I could grab hold of the best parts of who I was and use those as building blocks to figure out who I could be. It wasn't a question of necessarily who I wanted to be. It was a question of who I could be and how I could regain a sense of balance and control in my life so that I could live a fulfilling life and not be living in the gutter of this illness, possibly forever.
What are some things that you did to avoid feeling like you're being defined by this one condition?
Well, I stumbled a lot. It was very important to me, having just graduated from the nursing program, to try to be able to retrieve some sense of the possibility of having a career. I went back to work full-time initially, managed to get through that for a year, and then had to quit because I had a major setback for a couple of years. Then I've gone back to work. I realized, well, part-time would probably suit me, and I went back part-time. But I also find that if I'm exhausted and I'm not sleeping well, I can't guarantee what time of the day I'll be able to wake up and be functioning. And that makes employment rather a tricky thing when someone wants you in the office at 8 o'clock every morning, even if it's only 3 days a week. That became very problematic. And eventually I applied for disability and was granted disability, which makes it easier for me to have a flexible schedule. I also came to realize that though I really like being involved in civic activities, that I cannot put everything into them and to the exclusion of everything else in my life. That has taken years to come to that conclusion and be comfortable with that. I'd say for other people who are facing these kinds of challenges, I think it's really, really, really important to go to counseling. And I found that not one counselor was able to provide me with everything, that I had to go through a series of different counselors, depending on the stage that I was in the development. I've probably seen 15 counselors, some great and some not so great, and found a lot of assistance in that process.
So while you're going through this transformative experience and wondering about your identity, which parts of yourself were those parts that you held on to and carried forward into your current self?
Well, I think the most important parts are the parts that value human relationship. And for me, I realized that human relationships are key to a sense of well-being in me, and that cultivating human relationships is the most important part of my mental health. And that's a huge portion of being able to deal with chronic fatigue or any chronic illness. You've got to have some sense of peace and mental health in conjunction with dealing with the physical difficulties of a chronic illness. And that's what I've always hung on to.
What are some things we can do to be a better friend or colleague to someone who is dealing with an invisible illness?
Well, tip number one, never say, well, you look great. I actually ran into a former physician of mine recently, and she said, well, you look great. And I just wanted to say, well, that doesn't matter a bit. That's one thing. The other thing is, please don't give unsolicited advice. I have had so many people give me advice. Try Juice Plus, macrobiotic diet. Have you tried hypnotherapy? And the answer is yes, 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 yes.
You sure you don't want my acupuncturist card?
Been there, done that. The other thing is, please, please don't try to tell me that the universe doesn't give me anything that I can't handle. That is garbage. The universe gives us human beings plenty of things that we can't handle, and that's why people die and struggle and suffer. Don't tell me that there is some universal plan that includes me suffering. I don't want to hear it.
On behalf of all of us, Kathleen, thank you. Thank you. I'd like to make a line of t-shirts based on what you just said. We're living in kind of a special place. We are on the California coast. We're aboard the mothership for a lot of New Age thought and medicine. So it just living within this specific culture kind of make it difficult to...
Well, in some ways, yes, and in other ways, no, because this is where I was diagnosed, as opposed to people I've come in contact with who live on the East Coast who have spent 16 years before getting a diagnosis. So in some ways, I was very, very lucky to live in this kind of community that is on the cutting edge, not only of New Age stuff, but of allopathic medical stuff that allowed me to get the attention that I needed.
Did you just try loving yourself more?
Oh, Emma, yes, I love myself plenty, believe me. And there are other people that I don't like. And no, I am not creating a funky reality for myself. Life is tough sometimes.
So for all the years you've been dealing with this, are you seeing improvement in general of understanding of these conditions from the medical community, from society at large? Is it getting better? Just our ability to wrap our minds around it and treat you well?
It is getting better, as a matter of fact. The CDC recognized chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome as an illness. It is now a lot easier to get disability if you've been diagnosed with this illness. There are still pockets, though, of places in the United States that don't have the education. The doctors don't have the education that they need to spot the illness, to go through the steps to diagnose it. And they don't have the resources to learn about what effective treatments are, because at this point there is no cure. There's some people recover spontaneously and others don't.
Last question, Kathleen, as we wrap up our time together. I'm bringing back an old one. I used to like closing a show asking my guests this question. I'm bringing it back just for you. Someday, Kathleen, a very long time from now, what would you like inscribed on your tombstone?
That is so my favorite question. I'm so glad you asked me that, Emma. I would like my tombstone to say, "She was a Jill of all trades and a mistress of none."
Very nice. Well, thank you so much for lending us a little understanding. Hopefully this will make it a lot easier for other people who are dealing with their chronic invisible illnesses and all the people who care about them. So thanks for coming. It's great to have you back in the studio, Kathleen.
Thank you, Emma. This was great. Thanks.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Emma Brecon, and I've been speaking with KHSU's own Kathleen Marshall about chronic and invisible illness. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer, Katie Whiteside, and to our entire production team. You can listen to this show again anytime and through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives. Visit our blog at khsuwomen.com and join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.